SF Signal, Episode 13. What are the best genre TV shows on air right now, and why should we be watching them? And join us after the roundtable for a special interview with Joseph Malozzi, executive producer of Stargate Universe. This is the SF Signal podcast, episode number 13, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight I am joined by a bunch of people. I was trying to think of a better word, but bunch is going to work for now, who bring us sfsignal.com each and every week. Let's go down the list here and say hello to Mr. Jay Garman.
Hi, I'm Jay Garman. I'm a technology journalist. I blog at jgarman.net. I help run the Conglomeration Science Fiction Convention, and I own the world's worst Skype headset.
And number two, but you're obviously number one with me, and you can guess which number one, Mr. Jeff Patterson.
Hi, Jeff Patterson, blogger at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com.
Matthew Sanborn Smith, not to be confused.
Not to be confused with Matthew Manborn Smith.
Yes. You have a hairy mango in your pocket.
Yes, I do, and it's about to pop out. Well,
hopefully it can stay in there for another 15 minutes.
It's starting to rot, actually.
And Lisa Spindler, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm Lisa Pate Spindler. I'm a blogger, writer, and designer, and my URL is lisapatespindler.com.
And I wrote down Lisa Pate Spindler, and then I stared at the Skype Lisa Spindler, and I forgot the Pats.
It's all right.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Next up, Mr. John DiNardo.
How are you doing? John DiNardo, resident blogger at SF Signal.
And, of course, the incredible Mr. Fred Kish.
Hi, it's Fred Kish from Lensman's Children, and by day I manipulate world money markets and cause banks to crash.
Woohoo! Are you responsible for Bank of America's foreclosure thing?
No, I'm working on making them close down permanently. So.
And tonight we are here to talk about what are the best genre TV shows on air right now, and why should we be watching them? I know that Lisa's dying to tell us about this, so go ahead.
What do you want me to start? What show do you want to talk about?
You pick one.
I just watched SGU before we came on here, this week's episode, but is it too soon to talk about that yet?
I don't think so. And anybody care if we have some spoilers about this week's episode?
My main takeaway from this week's episode is that it's actually one of my favorites, even though I haven't been a huge fan to date. But what I liked about tonight's, well, that I watched it tonight, it was earlier this week, this episode, was that it kind of gave a break for the audience, something good, a break in the pacing, a plus, something on the plus side where everything has been so negative. And what that does, I think, is make the negative points, all this turmoil that's going on in the rest of the show, even more poignant. So kudos. I like this week's episode.
Now, there was a ton of Rush shenanigans in this episode.
Yes, he just continues to be his likable self.
And this was a huge, big Chloe episode.
It was. Since we're going to go with spoilers, Rush, at the end, he's blackmailing her. And at least now someone else is in on his secret of finding the real bridge.
Boy, I got to ask, though. So the crew was able to detect that there was something wrong with Chloe, right?
Yes.
And then by the end, it's like, oh, no, she's fine. But she's not fine.
But they didn't detect what is actually wrong. They just noticed her behavior being different.
True, but she didn't know like she was winding up in different parts of the ship doing stuff, right?
Right.
So if that starts happening again, isn't kind of the cat out of the bag?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to stop that from happening, but I think Rush is just counting on buying some time.
Well, my question is, what happened to the scaly leg thing that they showed in a teaser?
We did not see that at all.
Mm-mm.
That is a very good question.
Mm-mm.
Episodes yet to come, perhaps.
They did show the aliens who kidnapped her in Rush in the preview. And sometimes I think that even if sometimes I think previews are meant to get you not thinking in tangible terms of what's going to be happening in that particular episode, but kind of to get your mind. Sometimes I think they're clues, even if they're not directly related to the episode. So I wonder if she's turning into one of them.
Who knows? Now, obviously, Stargate Universe is a very cool show, and I'm enjoying it. Lisa's enjoying it. It sounds like some other folks are enjoying it. Matthew Sanborn Smith, what do you have?
Well, the show that everybody should be watching, if they're not already, is The Venture Brothers. I don't watch much TV, but I go out of my way to see this show. It's a cross between Johnny Quest, superheroes, and super science. It's funny as hell. It's got a fantastic cast of characters who all have their own histories. And it's an evolving story. Things change from episode to episode and affect what's going on. It's well written. It's insane, which is the best part of all. And they're not afraid to go anywhere with their story, with the characters, or their jokes.
Very cool. And which network is this one on?
That's on Adult Swim, Cartoon Network.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they usually have some really good stuff on Adult Swim.
So are you telling me you haven't seen Venture Brothers?
I have not seen it.
Oh, my God. All right, you must run out and rent the DVDs because they're fantastic.
Is it streaming on Netflix?
No.
No. Okay.
Although I think they have streamed some episodes on Cartoon Network or on Adult Swim's site. You should definitely check that out. And it's got one of the greatest bodyguards of all time, Brock Sampson, who's voiced by Patrick Warburton, and he is an absolute maniac. And they give him plenty of people to kill.
I've enjoyed Patrick Warburton since he played Putty on Seinfeld.
Love that guy.
He was the tick.
He was a great tick. There's a great scene where he's sitting in the restaurant and they're eating, and he grabs the fortune cookie and he pops it in his mouth. He starts crunching it, and he realizes there's a paper, and he pulls it out, and he's like, "Arthur, look, it's a message from my teeth."
He's on Rules of Engagement now, and he's hilarious.
Yes. Well, he's just great. I've always liked him. Jay Garman, what are you watching?
I'm watching far too much, but if you're going to make me pick exactly one show that everyone should be watching, I'm going to have to go with Fringe for the simple fact that John Noble, who plays Dr. Walter Bishop, the fact that he was not nominated for an Emmy is a crime against humanity. He is unreal. He plays multiple roles. He plays psychotic alternate and not psychotic. Exactly. It's unreal. And what I can't quite put my finger on exactly how J.J. Abrams has done this, but it's an utterly episodic and disposable show in a lot of ways. It's very much – it started out as a blatant X-Files ripoff, and it has matured around this very well-done alternate universe storyline that they're taking chances that I would not have expected any other show to have taken. I mean, they're basically leaving a main character in completely separated from the main plot for most of this season and making it work, which – is daring just from a writing point of view. I'm also enjoying Stargate Universe, and I like that they're trying to do things that like Star Trek Voyager and Battlestar Galactica didn't do, which is make sort of a castaway show actually have castaway consequences. I appreciate that. From a writing point of view, it seems like they start down a plot line and then immediately solve it within an episode and never let it linger and really have emotional heft to it. You know, a team gets left behind on a planet and have to find some way back to the ship. And at the end of the next episode, they just sort of, yeah, okay, they're back. No problem. Or this guy's kidnapped and, oh wait, aliens brought him back. No problem. That has frustrated me about SGU, and Fringe is not doing that. They're letting the consequences of the character's actions stay on. And that, I think that's really unusual in television. And the fact that it's also not a stupid show is just icing on the cake.
I like that they did the Monster of the Week formula in the alternate universe. Right?
Yes. That was kind of neat. Yes. That was awesome. You know, and I just love Walter. Like you said, John Noble. He's fantastic.
Best character on TV right now. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. And they throw in all kinds of little in-jokes, too. Like, you know, when you go to the alternate universe, it's not Green Lantern, Green Arrow. It's Red Lantern, Red Arrow.
Right.
Or yeah.
That Eric Stoltz stayed the star in
Back to the Future. Yep.
They showed a couple different comic book covers that were slightly different, if I remember right.
Yes. Well, and they my favorite in-jokes in this, if we're going to go down that rabbit hole, is and they pull these out a lot, is they keep showing posters for movies that don't exist in our universe, like all kinds of Indiana Jones sequels that we never had, you know, or Superman-Batman team-ups that, like, I wish we had, depending on who directed them. So that just little bits like that, that, yeah, we can get things like that from Warehouse 13 and Eureka, and they're cute, but they're throwing that into a show that isn't just all geek candy. They've got actual plot going on.
Hey, Jay, two things that you said really made me think that, one, I think Walter Noble is really playing two flavors of insane instead of one sane and one insane character, because Walternate really is crazy in his own way. I mean, the last episode, well, I have one on my TiVo, but last week, the episode, I think, where he talked about how he misses the lab and how didn't he say something about how the whole world is his lab now or something? That whole there was really freaky.
Do you ever miss being a scientist?
Yes.
I am a scientist.
Yes.
The whole world is my laboratory now. Yes. Exactly. Well, and not to give a spoiler, but sort of his whole end game is to kill his son to wipe out a universe. I mean, no one sane has I'm going to destroy an entire universe of human beings as a goal. It's like that doesn't – there's no personality test that says, okay, that's cool. We've got no problem with that. That's totally rational.
The other thing that you talked about, how episodic SGU has been lately, but the ongoing story with the bridge with Rush and now this new storyline with Chloe is going across episodes. So mm-hmm. I don't think they can really get away from having some kind of episodic nature each time.
Their network exec won't let them get away from that, I don't think. Right. So they're hampered by that.
Another spoiler alert here for Fringe is that, you know, Leonard Nimoy's character.
William Bell.
Bell left Massive Dynamics to Walter.
Which
and that is just insane.
Meanwhile, his right-hand woman, I don't know, did she get anything?
She got something in the will. They made that clear, but we don't know what it is. And it's supposedly of equal value to what he gave Walter. So
a real hand?
Maybe it's access to Walter's LSD.
Yes, I love the scenes where Walter is talking and doing stuff, and you know, it's like people are going, what the hell's going on? And Peter walks in and says, you know, he's tripping, right? He's self-medicated himself. And Walter's like, yeah, and I tried a different mix this time. You know, it's just, oh my God, it's just a great show. Jeff Patterson, I know you're waiting patiently.
I'm sorry, I don't watch television.
Boy, did you pick the right podcast?
Yeah, you were going to tell us about Friday Night SmackDown.
Yeah, your favorite show. Precisely. A couple things. Number one, one thing I have been watching is the new Genndy Tartakovsky series, Symbionic Titan. Mm-hmm. The last episode wasn't particularly good, but the episodes before that I really have been enjoying. Aliens on Earth, giant robot, invading monsters, you know, stupid fun. It's not quite up there with Samurai Jack, but then again, I don't think anything else ever will be.
I loved that show.
If I was the kind of person who obtained my foreign television rather unscrupulously, I could be enjoying the Sarah Jane Adventures, which has gone through four episodes so far, and which I would probably think has been relatively enjoyable, because I would want to ramp up to the Doctor episodes next week. In that same vein, PBS is going to be showing, it's not exactly science fiction, but it's close enough for government work, the three-part Sherlock series, which is going to be airing on PBS starting next week, the 90-minute episodes.
Did that ever air on BBC America?
I don't believe it did. I think it went straight to PBS.
What the hell?
It starts next week. It's 3 episodes. It is very technology oriented, which is why I do not feel guilty throwing this in here. And I especially the first episode, I was just brilliant, and I cannot wait to see where they go with it. Also, BBC showed the it's not a TV series; it was a TV movie, but they showed the first Men in the Moon last night. Once again, if I was unscrupulous, I would highly recommend.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Fred Kish.
Yes, do I.
Fred, I know you wanted to talk about comic books and graphic novels.
Oh, yes. I read them as much as I watch TV. Now, you see, here's the weird thing. I mean, my viewing habits have really changed over the past couple of years because my wife gets up at an ungodly hour, so I have to be quiet at night. And my daughter goes to sleep, you know, early enough to get a good night's sleep for school. So I tend to watch DVD box sets when they come out. So I'm working my way through season 1.0 and 1.5 of SGU.
I mean, don't you love the 1.0, 1.5 bullcrap that?
Well, we'll get into that. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah. We just gave you spoilers, you know, like in that Star Trek movie, Data dies.
By the time I view season 2, I'll have forgotten everything that's happened tonight, you know, and the scotch will help as well. So I'm taping SGU, and the only show that I really watch on a regular basis is Big Bang Theory.
I love
I can sit down and watch that with my daughter.
I love the Big Bang Theory.
So do I.
I mean, anything that makes fun of geeks, scientists, fans, I mean, it's like watching... what was it? Galaxy Quest rolled into, you know, name your favorite bad fan-ish based movie like Trekkers, Trekkies, you know, all that kind of stuff. All into one. Great stuff.
All I have to say about that is this. Lisa.
Yes.
No, the best thing was when Howard recorded Sheldon's voice and was knocking.
Yes.
You know, Penny, and she opens the door in a tower. She's like, would you have opened it if you had known it was me? No.
I think one of the funniest episodes of that show ever was where Sheldon was in the plastic balls. Plastic ball tank. I don't know if you saw that where I guess he was sick or something or something. I can't remember at this point what it was.
He was doped up on medicine for being sick, wasn't he? Or
yes.
Was he
something like that. And he's in those balls, and Leonard's trying to grab him, and he just keeps going under and coming up, bazinga, back under. That was the funniest damn thing ever.
Or when he's the virtual Sheldon. he's become gone past the technological singularity, and he's a robot.
Yes, and he rolls up to Wozniak,
yes,
in the restaurant, and Wozniak's like such a nerd. Speaking of John DiNardo.
hello. Hey, wait. So the two must-watch shows that we've already talked about, Fringe and Stargate, I think those are really the best genre shows on right now. There are a few genre shows I watch that are not on the air right now, but they will be returning. Doctor Who, I think, is always fun, and it's something I can share with my daughter, who really enjoys it as well. Warehouse 13 and Eureka, I kind of lump those together as watch them because they're fun. You don't have to scrutinize them. In fact, if you do, you won't enjoy it, kind of thing.
They're
very lighthearted. They don't take themselves too seriously, but they're a lot of fun to watch.
They have crossed over. You're right.
Yes, and they cross. In fact, we're in an alternate universe on Eureka, right? It's the alternate universe with Warehouse 13 in it or something, right? So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that for all of my earlier ragging on Eureka, I do enjoy it. I do watch it, and I have to give them credit for doing a time travel story where they didn't go back and reset at the end, that the time travel story had long-term, lasting, permanent consequences.
They did that in the first season, too.
Yeah, nobody else does that ever. With it, I mean, the only exception you can possibly make is the Yesterday's Enterprise consequences on Next Generation. Other than that...
No. We don't talk about that crap. I do not want to talk about Tasha Yar in a blonde Romulan wig.
I'm not saying it was a good idea. I'm just saying that the only other show that just sort of said we had this time travel reset, but there were still long term consequences from it.
Bleh.
So yeah, so I enjoy it. You know, it's not one you scrutinize. It's Eureka is sometimes formulaic. You can kind of see that there's some unrelated story they introduce at the beginning that happens to be causing the weirdness of, you know, that kind of thing is kind of getting old. But I really enjoy it when it's on.
So
Lord, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, Lord, help me. I'm waiting for V to return.
You're that guy. You're that one guy.
I think there was like one extra, you know, Nielsen viewer who, you know, caused the show to come back. That's me.
Yeah. You're just waiting for Jane Badler to come on.
Yeah, I heard that she's coming back on. That's kind of funny. The original, whatever her name was. What was her name?
You can't even remember.
I don't remember.
Diana?
Diana, yes. Yeah.
Youth for a thousand, Alex.
Since I'm giving shout-outs, I'll give un-shout-outs for two brand-new shows that I gave up on after two episodes. No
The
Ordinary
Event?
Family and The Event.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried for two episodes, and I'm like, nah. They weren't.
I watched the first 3.5 minutes of The Event, and then I left forever.
Same here.
Well, the event had a 24 vibe going for it, and the 24 was my guilty pleasure these past couple of years. Yes, they jumped the shark with the cougar, and I was in there anyway. It was watching 24 was a challenge between the writers who would throw every unbelievable thing they could at you, you know, daring you to stop watching, and the viewer who would dig in his heels and watch anyway. And I was that guy too. So, you know, go figure.
They jumped a shark with a cougar.
Yes, they did amazing. So the event kind of had that thing going for it, but then they're playing these tricks with the 21 days earlier, and it's like, well, we already surmised what happened because you just told us that.
Those damn titles drove me nuts. That's why I gave up on that show. I was like, forget it. Yeah. You forget it.
I don't mind nonlinear storytelling, but if you're going back to tell me something you've already told me, then there's no reason to show me that. Anyway, so that's pretty much it.
And, yeah, I watched just a little bit of No Ordinary Family, and I'm not into that either. let's go down and do a thumbs up, thumbs down on a couple different things. I'll call your name. Caprica, Jay Garman.
Thumbs down, and that was mostly a protest vote against the ending of Battlestar Galactica. I was not going back to the well after how that series ended. So
seconded.
I was going to say Third. Jeff Patson. Okay. How about Matthew?
What? Matthew thumbs up? Definitely.
No.
I've never seen Caprica.
That's a thumb sideways.
Yes.
Plus, I never cared for the way Matthew ended.
Please don't tell me how I end.
Okay. Donardo, Caprica.
Yes, thumb sideways. I never jumped on board.
Fred?
Never got through the pilot episodes and never bothered with the series.
I couldn't get through the pilot episode, and someone told me that I quit it just when it got good. And I said, yeah, you know what? I think you would have said that no matter where I quit it. Sanctuary. Jay.
Again, never even gave it a chance. I like my Amanda tapping on Stargate, and that's it. I don't want to see her transported to any other venue. I know that's wrong of me, and I'll
admit it. That's a fickle viewer right there.
Yeah, really.
I am totally fickle on that. My real reason was I caught about the first 15 minutes of the pilot, and I'm like, wow. I thought Mansquito had bad effects and poor writing, and I just jumped out at that point.
Well, one of these days, Jay, you're going to have to let the walls down and tell us what you really feel about this stuff.
I will. I promise.
Jeff Patterson.
Yes.
Sanctuary. Ever watch it?
I saw about 20 minutes of one episode, probably halfway through the first season. I tried really hard to figure out what was going on and couldn't. I equate it with watching the Monkees movie Head.
That is an equation that has never been made before by anyone, I am confident.
This is a show that does not know how to gather new viewers in its first season, and that's been my total exposure to it. And I still can't get clean after watching it.
Matt, you ever watch Sanctuary?
No, I'm sorry. My TV's not plugged into the wall.
Gotcha. Lisa?
Sanctuary is kind of a guilty pleasure for me. I mean, I don't take it as seriously as some other shows that I watch, but I do enjoy it. It's a fun hour.
I wanted to equate it to Primeval.
Yeah.
But
which comes back in January.
I gave up on it. I mean, it's just, it's been killing me.
I got a huge kick out of the Bollywood episode. Any science fiction program that can work Bollywood in there somehow, it's fun.
Did you happen to see Kuthra Pali get drunk and then Wolowitz talk about how he decided to go out and get some sort of horrible...
Yep.
Yeah. And then, but I love the little dance he did, you know, dong, 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 and he's like, that's offensive. And everybody says, yeah, that's pretty much how we felt about it when you did it. Anyway, DiNardo, Sanctuary, yes, no?
Haven't seen it.
Brad?
I've watched about 3 or 4 episodes, and I think there's half a germ of maybe a semi-good idea in there somewhere, but I don't know. They just like, hey, wouldn't it be neat if? Hey, wouldn't it be neat if? And threw it all in the blender.
Well, since Sliptak's not here, I'll go ahead and throw Clone Wars out there. I think that's a pretty decent show. I know Lisa had a comment about that.
You know, I like it in general, but I have a real problem with Ahsoka Tano's attire. She's supposed to be 14. It's just completely ridiculous. But other than that, I'm okay with it.
Okay. And obviously, you know, the best show that nobody's watching and everybody should be watching is Chuck.
I'm going to back you up on that, actually. Me, the apparent harsh critic, I adore Chuck, and it's not because of the writing, although it's occasionally quite good. I think that's an example of a show that is elevated by the ability of its cast. That the cast takes what is mediocre writing and makes it really, really good by just hitting the notes perfectly. I mean, I can't think of a single wasted cast member. In fact, I wish the secondary cast members would have more screen time because they are golden.
Everybody does, yeah. I mean, when they brought it back for another season, everybody was like, you have to bring back, you know, Jester and
yes.
The Bymore folks. And they did, which was cool. Did anybody catch this week's episode where there was a great little side comment about the A-Team?
It yet resides on my DVR, so if you want to spoil it, I won't hunt you down and kill you. But
no, I won't spoil it for you. But it's just a nice little comment about the A-Team, which I thought was kind of amusing. Anybody absolutely hate Chuck?
I gave up on it in season one. Well, first I question the fact that Chuck is sci-fi. I know there's the
spy-fi.
Whole
spy-fi.
It's spy-fi is what it is, right? So it doesn't feel like a sci-fi show, but it's got that element of the mimetic memory or whatever you call it and that whole thing, but whatever.
And you know, I mean, having the iPhone size computer that can crack a building security system, you know, I mean, that's kind
gadgets,
of science fiction.
You know, whatever, you know,
there's an app for that.
I gave up on season one when everyone turned out to be a spy. Oh, look, here's her long lost father. Oh, he's a spy. Here's Chuck's long lost friend.
Long father was not a spy.
Well, somebody was a spy.
He was a
Everybody
con
was
man.
A spy. They kept revealing everyone to be a spy, and I was like, formulaic, I'm moving on. And that's pretty much
okay.
What I did. I hear it's gotten better, but I'm not into it anymore.
Look, we're all spies. We can all get along.
I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Okay, so who wants let's wrap this up. Fred, any more thoughts on genre television?
Bring back Buck Rogers. I don't know.
Well, they are bringing back Buck Rogers.
I would love
Rogers.
To see a remake of Buck Rogers.
It's a web series.
I'm just wondering, you know, we've a lot of people have DVRs. We have channels. We have webisodes. We have direct-to-DVD. You know, is like a lot of other genre stuff, it just getting so fractured that we get a half dozen people together and they all watch 6 different shows, and they're like, what? I never heard of that one. I mean, before we get to that point.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah,
I've never seen Chuck. I hate to admit it. I've never seen Chuck.
I think you would love it. But there is a Buck Rogers coming back, and Gil Gerard and Aaron Gray are in it. They're playing Buck Rogers' parents, and it's a web series.
As long as it's better than that damn Flash Gordon remake.
Oh. Don't get
yeah, let's take the guy that was so boring they fired him from Smallville, okay? And let's build a series around him.
Oh, they originally wanted him to be Aquaman.
Really? Because I thought Justin Hartley turning the Green Arrow was the original Aquaman. So.
Oh, was it him? I knew it was one of them. They look alike.
How can you make a series about Aquaman? He swims around in the ocean. There can be no dialogue.
Hey, they had the man from Atlantis.
It would be similar to Night Boat. There would always be like a canal.
Wait, you passed over this. Props to Matt for mentioning the man from Atlantis.
Hey, I like that show.
Hey, something, we got to back you up here a little bit. Batman,
I still have
Brave
nightmares about Patrick Duffy's webbed fingers. Really do.
Hey, the Batman Brave and the Bold series, I highly recommend finding the Aquaman episodes because their take on Aquaman is spectacular.
Oh, no.
That's a good show. I have seen
it's
episodes.
It's very Patrick Warburton, in fact.
Is it? Yeah, it is. No,
it's not him, but like that kind of like over the top comedy is very.
Especially the Aquaman Family Vacation episode is possibly one of the funniest half hours of TV I've seen in a while. So.
Oh no, I can't. But
they
go to
the beach.
I like my Batman dark.
Every time. Well, that's the nice thing about it. Batman does manage to retain a good deal of what they've established in the previous cartoons through the course of the series. It's the contrast of that against the other characters in the DC universe that they team them up with, which is why Aquaman being so over the top is perfect, because every time Batman needs them, he has to put up with them.
Oh no. DiNardo, any other thoughts?
Nope.
Lisa?
Phineas and Ferb.
Phineas and Ferb was mentioned several times. And again, this is something I know nothing about.
It's awful.
Man, you got to get out more.
There are only two episodes that you watch, Unfair Science Fair and Quantum Boogaloo. Those are the two episodes you need to see.
I'm just excited that Invader Zim is back on Netflix.
I guess you're the only one.
Apparently I am. Jeez.
I'm waiting for Ron Moore to reboot Star Lost.
Star Lost?
Yes.
Yeah, Star Lost.
The Harlan Ellison series that even Harlan Ellison hates? Wait, Harlan Ellison hates everything, so I guess...
Speaking of that, did anyone see the Harlan Ellison H.P. Lovecraft Scooby-Doo the other day?
No, I heard about that. I want to see that.
He played a much younger version of himself, and Jeffrey Combs played H.P. Hatecraft, and it was actually not horrible, and I'm a people are going to hate me, but I've never been a Scooby-Doo fan, and I found this episode quite enjoyable.
Zoinks.
Are
there Scooby snacks involved?
Like true confessions tonight.
No, there weren't.
All right, Matt, you have any final thoughts?
The only thing that I have left to say, I should have mentioned this earlier, since you've never seen this, Patrick, you've never seen Venture Brothers, and maybe the rest of you guys haven't either, I don't know, but as a selling point, the main bad guy is called the Monarch, and he dresses like a butterfly. Check that show out.
I will do so.
Jeff, any final thoughts?
No, I work in TV 50 to 60 hours a week, so I really try to stay away from it when I get home. So.
I understand. Jay?
I want to congratulate this panel on going the entire time without mentioning True Blood. Which is sort of like the elephant in the room.
Or Supernatural.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I like Supernatural for the most part. I wish they'd get back to cooler stories, but I did want to throw out Suke.
An entire show based around the notion of, okay, what is the most over-the-top thing we can do? Okay, then let's do it naked.
With blood.
With blood.
Yes. Now, Supernatural is. I like the first couple seasons. I liked when the dad was still alive.
Yeah, I love those episodes.
I will throw out there that Bobby is perhaps my most favorite character ever, next to Walter.
Yeah, he is pretty awesome. And this last episode, where he got the whole episode was from his point of view, was
Weekend at Bobby's.
One of the best. Yes. Yeah. I think they're doing pretty well here. What is this, season 6? And they were only planning to do 5, and this was, you know, the season they weren't planning to do, and it's post-apocalypse, and I think they're still making it interesting.
Do you think Sam is still the devil?
Of course.
Yeah, so do I. The other one I'd throw out there that is spy-fi is Nikita.
I'm not hearing good things about Nikita.
It's funny because they show commercials about how it's the new hit show, and they've taken it off the air to retool it.
Well, I mean, I've heard that she's sort of got no personality, and not she's supposed to be this, you know, trained assassin, and yet she's getting rescued all the time. And
yep.
I haven't seen it. That's what I've been told.
Yeah, it's 90210 with spies.
Yeah, so that's not really Nikita. No. I love the
USA previous Network series. La Femme Nikita.
Peter Wilson.
Yeah, I love that series.
That was a great series. All right, I think we're done. I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Ciao.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Have your own thoughts on the subject? Tell us what they are. Call us at our voicemail line, 720-277-9082. So this evening, we have a very special guest, and I'm already tongue-tied, Mr. Joseph Malazzi. He is he's been executive producer, I guess, of all the Stargate shows, SG-1, Atlantis, and now Universe. He's written some episodes. He's also written a wonderful short story in the Masked anthology, edited by Lou Anders. Welcome.
Thanks, guys.
We've also got John Anilio, John DiNardo, and JP France with us here. Just real quick, what's the deal with the shuttlecraft?
We don't have a shuttlecraft. Actually, I believe Star Trek has a shuttlecraft. We have a shuttle. We did have a shuttle. We had two shuttles. One was damaged. One was working order. And then, the damaged shuttle, we kind of fixed and left, on the planet in an episode called Faith back in season one. And then our working shuttle crashed.
Yes, I saw that.
Episode season two. So we are shuttleless.
Yeah, but that sucker took off in like the first episode. Someone was flying it. That's driving me up a wall. You have to wrap that up before the last episode. You have to tell me.
Well, actually, the thing that you saw fly off at the end was how would I put this? It was placed there by the aliens. I call them the blueberry aliens, but the aliens that appeared in space. The design of the device is almost exact. Very, very similar to the fighters that they flew in, and one of them basically ended up attaching to the ship's hull and cutting through the hull and grabbing Chloe.
Causing problems.
Ooh. Yes. Well, I mean, even though it was never said visually, I guess you were supposed to make the connection, but I guess evidently it wasn't that.
Do you have it now for you? That's been driving me up a wall.
I'm sorry. You should have just called me. I was here for you.
Taking calls from fans. Answer their questions.
I like to be as open as possible.
So, we're all fans, I think, of Stargate. I know Anilio has gotten into it a little bit late. I've been watching it since it was on Showtime's like Sci Friday. I just had a conversation where I was telling someone, you know, they kept saying, you know, what's going to be the next big show after Battlestar? Well, it's been a couple years now. The next big show is Universe. They should be watching Universe.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, Joseph, can you tell us what you do as a producer of the show? Because I know I'm not exactly sure what, you know, that your kind of day-to-day work is. Can you maybe give people who are listening to the show what your job is?
I can understand. I mean, a producer credit can mean anything from the hands-on producer who basically does the cuts, oversees the episodes like I do, to basically someone who contributes money to the production, to basically the executive producer's secretary's mother who had an idea and she gets a vanity credit. In my case, actually, or in the case of almost all the producers on Stargate, we oversee our own episodes, our specific episodes. So we'll head the meetings, prep week. We'll make the decisions on the costumes, make the decisions on casting, make the decisions on everything from props and, visual effects to special effects. And, you know, we go in, after the director has done his cut, and we'll do our producer's cut. We'll take the network notes. We'll deal with the studio as well. Pretty much we oversee all aspects of production, and then specifically as showrunners as well, or co-showrunners, we deal with, you know, the budgetary concerns, sort of day-to-day finances of the production.
There's math involved.
You know what? Yeah, it's nice to have a partner. Paul's might be my partner, and I've always kind of been attracted to the costumes or the casting. Whereas he's been more kind of a numbers guy, so it's worked out perfectly. I haven't taken math since grade 10. I think that was the last time I took a math course. So I'm a little rusty.
Yeah, well, as John DeNardo said early on, that you do some of the writing on the show. What's sort of the creative process in terms of getting the writers together? Do you guys meet up, you know, way ahead of time and sort of plan out the story arcs? And then is each sort of, you know, do you know exactly what's going to sort of happen in each episode, and then it's sort of given out to the different writers? How does that whole thing happen?
I want to know if you guys have a plan.
Yes.
In fact, as of I think mid season one, we already knew where we're going to end up. We already knew what the last episode was going to be.
Oh, nice.
Basically, what the mission was, where it would, and where it would lead, and, you know, who would live, who would die, etc. But in answer to your question, as soon as we find out about a pickup and we know we're coming back for another season, the writers gather for, 3 weeks to a month. And we basically spin out ideas. We say, okay, this is what we did last year. What do we want to do this season? And so, we think about, let's say, the major arcs. One of the major arcs that we talked about wanting to do for season two was the descent of Colonel Young. Sort of, if you watch the first few episodes of season two, you'll see that psychologically he's taken several hits.
Oh yeah.
Dealing with the loss of some, you know, people under his command, the death of his daughter, the fact that he essentially had to kill Riley, and then basically the loss of a really good friend, Telford, in the last episode. And he is racked, and it's not going to get much better for him. There's going to come a point where people serving underneath him are going to start questioning his ability to command. And, you know, for instance, that's where we wanted to go with his character. And we said, okay, this is what we want to do with Young. How do we get him there? And we all came up with stories for, it was, I think, the first eight episodes. And whoever comes up with the story doesn't necessarily write it. It's always very nice to hear, you know, you did such a great job on this script. And, you know, individually we do write the scripts, we write the dialogues, but the stories are broken by all of us. So we'll get in a room, we'll put, you know, the title up on the whiteboard, and we'll say, okay, let's break it down, you know, a tease in five acts, what happens in every scene, you know, what do we have to service, what arcs do we have to track, what character arcs, and that's how sort of this, you know, the episodes progress. We have a specific story you want to tell. For instance, in Aftermath, Rob wanted to tell the story of the shuttle crash. And, you know, we thought, okay, basically there's going to be a shuttle crash or stranded on the planet. How does that tie into, you know, the arcs we're building for this season? And, you know, we discuss Rush's discovery of the bridge, how that factors into the crash, basically how the death of Riley impacts Young, and various, you know, other moments going on. For instance, the Lucian Alliance, they're on board the ship, how that is going to develop. In previous incarnations, in SG-1 and Atlantis, the stories tend to be more unified, standalone stories. I mean, you know, we would track certain aspects, of course. I mean, character elements and stories. But for the most part, you know, we went off world, we dealt with a situation, and, you know, the ending was fairly clean. So if the Lucian Alliance, let's say, attacked Atlantis, very similar to, they did, like, the Genii attacked Atlantis in the storm, you know, we did a big two-parter, and that was that. SGU is a little more messy, so we have these loose ends. We have the Lucian Alliance members.
They're breadcrumbs. They're breadcrumbs. Sorry? They're breadcrumbs. They keep us coming week after week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, fans are, you know, some fans have sort of derisively, you know, likened us to a soap opera. And, you know, in a way, we are a space opera. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on with a lot of the different characters. And it's not just, you know, the action, the big action piece of the day. You know, we're looking to explore the relationships of these characters. And it's something that, I mean, the fans really wanted us to do in Atlantis. And we did up to a certain point. But, you know, whereas in, you know, Atlantis and SG-1, the characters, you know, genuinely loved each other. There is respect in SGU, but you can't really say that everyone loves everyone else.
No.
It's a much darker version.
And, I mean, just to quickly sum up, I mean, we're all in the story-breaking mode through that first month. We will break the first, let's say, 6 or 7 stories. We each assign a script. We go out, you know, write our outlines. We all give each other notes on our outlines. We write a first draft. We get notes from everybody on our first drafts, our writer's draft, and then we go in. We're always getting notes. Everybody's always contributing to everybody else's episodes. And, you know, I think it's a great process. I mean, you're never alone unless, like in my case now, I'm working on the big season finale and I'm actually – you know, sitting at home actually trying to hammer past page 25. In this case, I am alone. But, I mean, generally, you're not alone.
Whoever came up with the character of Rush,
they
deserve an Emmy.
Yeah. Brad and Robert, I mean, you know, they created the show. They created those core characters. And, you know, the characters were there on the page in Air 1, 2, and 3. But, I mean, as the show progresses, like any other show, you know, the actors bring something to those performances. And you know, as the season progresses, as the episodes go by, you become aware of the actors' strengths and you play to those strengths and the character develops that way. I take the character of Tamara, TJ, for instance, who was a character who, I mean, she's military, but really her position is she's the medic, the doc, I guess, the doctor, if you will, on board the ship. But when she had those flashes of, you know, her kick-ass military persona in season 1, she was so damn good that I said, you know, in season 2, that's what I want to explore. I want to do a story where we actually see that military side of her, which is how an episode called The Hunt came about, which is an episode I'm going to go in and cut tomorrow. But, I mean, we like to play to the strength of our cast, and our cast has many, many strengths. So, I mean, we're kind of spoiled in that respect.
Now, could you tell us a little something, because a lot of our episodes that we've had, we often interview science fiction authors. And I know that John Scalzi is involved or has been involved in the show as a creative consultant. Can you tell us a little bit about what he does or what he did with the show and how that's affected the show, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. John reads all the scripts. We send him the scripts and he'll send notes back and you know, on anything from, for instance, on my last script, The Hunt, he put on his, his ammo accountant hat and said, okay, basically you've expended this many, you know, bullets in this episode and this many bullets and you're running low on this. And I had to basically go back and backtrack and say, actually, we expended bullets in this episode, but we replenished in this episode and this and that. And so he's got his accounting hat on, his red shirt hat on, and, you know, most importantly, his science hat on. I mean, it's not just a matter of reading the scripts and basically saying, you know, this is plausible, this isn't plausible, why don't you try this? I mean, he'll give actual story, you know, structural notes as well, character notes. You know, quite frankly, I mean, something I've done a lot of this season is, you know, I've come up against a problem in a script where basically I need a scientific element or MacGuffin, if you will. And, you know, and I just go to John and I'm like, okay, this is the scenario. We need to find something similar to this for this to happen. And he'll email back and he'll say, okay, how about this? And, you know, I'll run with it. And it's happened, like I said, a couple of times this season where he's really personally saved my ass on several occasions.
So that explains it. I guess you went to him and said, you know, I got this scene where this guy holds up a book. What book should he hold up?
Well, yeah, exactly. No, you know, I read Old Man's War, what was it, maybe 4 years ago?
It's a great book.
So much. Oh, and yeah. then I lent it to Brad, and he loved it and made its way through the production. I mean, David Hewlett was a huge Scalzi fan as well. And I told him way back in season four, if you're interested in writing for the show, let me know. And John, you know, appreciated the invite, but said he would feel more comfortable starting on the ground floor. So I said, great, you know, we're, you know, talking about starting a new series, you know, somewhere down the line, we'll keep you in the loop. And then when Universe came around, Brad and I were talking, and Brad said, we should get John on board as a creative consultant if he'd be interested. And, you know, we contacted John, and he was interested, and he came to visit the set when, it was very, very early on. We were just putting it up. We had a great talk with him, and, we told him the door is open if you ever want to write a script, and he knows the door is always open, and, you know, every season I'll remind him again if he's interested. But, you know, John is a busy guy. I hear he does a little writing on the side as well. So
occasionally.
Yeah. So, hopefully he'll get around to that script sooner than later.
Well, it's very cool. And now you've done a little writing.
A little, yes. Yeah.
A little something called Downfall.
Yeah. Actually, that's interesting. I mean, I do I update a daily blog. It's sort of a behind the scenes on the show and profile various authors. I'm an avid reader, and I think it's a shame that more people don't read. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, a lot of sci-fi fans visit my blog, and if I can do even the smallest, have the smallest contribution and interest even a fraction of those fans in reading, then that would be good. Started this Book of the Month Club, and it's, you know, not just science fiction, but fantasy and horror as well. And it's just a way of introducing, you know, fans to potential new authors. And one of our first authors, actually, he's an editor, was Lou Anders, and his anthology Fast Forward One, the first one. And he came on and did a Q&A with the fans, and he really kicked off the book club. And, you know, I've had tons of authors since, Michael Moorcock, John Scalzi, of course, Joe Abercrombie, Jeffrey Ford, and Christopher Moore is coming up in November. Lou and I have spoken fairly regularly since, and he discovered I was a comic book fan, and he told me he was putting together this anthology of superhero themed fiction, and he asked if I'd be interested in contributing. And of course, I was touched that he would ask me, and then terrified at the prospect of actually writing a short story, because I tell you, I have nothing but respect for people who make a living writing prose fiction. It's really, really, really hard. And it's something I wrote on my blog. I mean, I told Lou, I said, sure, I'd be happy to do it. Give me a deadline and I'll write something for you. But if you don't like it, that's perfectly fine. I'd consider it, you know, just an exercise, and I'll serialize it on my blog. And it took me 10 months to write this short story, which, I mean, it's I guess a short story is closer to, I'd say, a novelette. It turned out to be fairly long. But it took me 10 months to write the story, as opposed to like the 2 or 3 months it takes me to write a script. I didn't really pay quite what a script would pay, but ultimately it was incredibly satisfying. Lou liked the story, thankfully, and a few other people did, which is great. And, I'm in fantastic, fantastic, fantastic company in that anthology. And I'm proud of the short story, but just in general, proud of that anthology.
Well, it's a great piece. It's very well written. And okay. And it's a different take.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, one of the things that Lou said when he approached me, he said, I'm trying to put together super hero-themed fiction in a way that really hasn't been done. He wanted to just have in prose form the type of stories that were being told, like on screen with The Dark Knight or in comic books and graphic novels along the lines of, you know, Watchmen or, you know, Kingdom Come. I wouldn't necessarily compare Downfall to any of those. I mean, it was just my take. I knew the story I wanted to tell. I didn't know really how long it would take me to get there. Evidently, as it turned out, a lot longer than I originally planned. But I mean, it was fun.
Very cool. John DiNardo?
Mr. DiNardo?
Yes.
You've been awful quiet. Are you awake?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I'm listening. Okay. These are great. I had questions about the writing and the direction that it was going, and take the time, I guess, to applaud you for what you do with regards to bringing that larger audience of TV land, right, to the world of books. Because I kind of agree. I think there's a lot of enjoyment to be derived from books, and so it's great that you're bringing those books to light. So thanks, and also thanks for participating in our mind melds while I have your ear.
Ah, my pleasure.
Does the crew of Destiny, do they have any books to read?
I think maybe there may be two or three books. I mean, there was that paperback that Rush was reading. Point in Darkness or Darkness and Light. So I mean that I'm sure that book has made its way around. But I don't think they have much time for reading. They're busy people.
You also use music really well to set the mood on that show. And you kind of started that a little bit with Atlantis. As a matter of fact, Atlantis is the reason that I bought some Johnny Cash.
Oh, excellent. Vegas.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, great episode. I don't think Anilio's got that far yet. But you started kind of setting the tone of the shows in Atlantis with some music. And now you've carried that into Universe, and I think you do it really well. How do you pick the music for an episode?
We have someone in LA who assembles, you know, a variety of different tunes, sort of independent, and sends them our way, and we select them. And in my case, it's always a director. And Andy Makita has selected, you know, and just I'm trying to remember. I mean, in Space and in Awakening, he was the one who chose the music. And I'll tell you, I know a few people complain about the musical montages at the end of the episodes, I'll tell you why we do them. One of the things that fans always complained about in Atlantis and SG-1 is we never did tags. When the episode ended, it ended. And we never felt, I mean, there was never, you know, the scenes afterwards or the wrap-up scenes where our crew is sitting around having a drink or talking, because, you know, at the end of the day, we just felt they were superfluous. But in Stargate Universe, we've kind of embraced the tags, but rather than, write the scene where they're just sitting there drinking and talking about really much ado about nothing, it's just a lot easier for us to cover a lot more ground in these montages and be able to sort of check in with different characters and, you know, just wrap up their individual little stories, or maybe even set up and, you know, hint at, you know, future storylines through these montages. I mean, we're trying to use them as sparingly as possible. Although, I mean, you know, two out of three so far, but
I find that those scenes actually, you know, as a viewer, I take that time to think about what the characters are thinking, what they've been through, and what they're thinking about what just happened, which is more than I do if they weren't there, if those scenes weren't there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's working.
And I think it adds a touch of, you know, SGU is, you know, kind of a heavier show emotionally. Yeah. I think having that music really is a nice balance, you know, kind of lightens it up a little bit, or just gets you to catch your breath even too. I think it's quite effective.
Well, and it is a heavier show. And I mean, that's one of the things that I put out there several times that I love about it. And I was even talking about it today on Twitter is, you know, with the difference between this show and the previous shows is the darkness is, you know, it is a heavier show. Mm-hmm. And I like that you had the balls to go in that direction, you know, and to try something different. It is different. It's not just a rehashing of SG-1.
Until they introduce the space monkey Gleek later this season.
Well, I'm pushing for it. Uh-oh, space monkeys. If quite honestly, if the universe hadn't come along, we wouldn't be producing Stargate. I know there are a lot of angry Atlantis fans who think that, you know, Stargate universe came along and knocked Atlantis off the air. As the former showrunner of Atlantis, I can tell you that wasn't the case. Although, again, you know, I have mentioned on previous occasions, the decision to announce a cancellation of Atlantis in the same press release as the announcement of the pickup of Stargate Universe was, in retrospect, not a wise decision. Anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still some talk and some hope out there that Atlantis might get a couple of DVD movies the way SG-1 has.
Ideally, yeah. I mean, Paul and I wrote the script a year ago. It's in MGM's hands, and I've got a copy sitting on my desk.
Yeah, I think the economy bounces back, and before you know it, we're going to have Atlantis on DVD.
I hope so. I forgot how much fun I had with the writing for the McKay character until David came back to do his guest spot on the show. I would love to do the honest movie. By the way, do you guys hear my dog barking?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, it's okay.
Let's close the door here. She's trying to remind me it's dinner time. I know. Hang on. She's very opinionated.
That's okay. the only thing that does bug me about Universe is the crossovers with the other series. For some reason, it doesn't feel like it. I love Richard Dean Anderson. I love what he did with Jack O'Neill.
Mm.
I don't want to see him on Universe.
Yeah, I can see how, it's an argument that we had in the room as well, how much of, the elements from previous incarnations of the franchise you want to introduce. I mean, and it went really beyond characters. I mean, there was argument about the Lucian Alliance, whether introducing the Lucian Alliance was a wise move.
Any excuse to see Rona Mitra is fine with me.
Awesome. She's an attractive woman.
Joe, one of the things I wanted to ask is because I'm kind of watching Stargate backwards. I actually started with Universe and then went back and watched some SG-1, and now I've been watching Atlantis. I have Netflix and I have the Roku player with the streaming, and I've watched the first 2.5 seasons in the past month and a half, and I've really been enjoying it. What's your feeling, kind of as a TV guy, of all the sort of TV on something like Netflix where you can stream it like that? Do you have any particular thoughts about that? Do you think that's a good thing?
A good thing or a bad thing? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically reality, is what it is, and it's something I've talked about on my blog. The fact that I don't know if anybody has noticed, but ratings have been dropping. Not just for our show, but just across the board, television in general, while coincidentally, downloads have been rising in technology. It feels like technology is moving faster than the television industry.
Or the newspaper industry.
The newspaper industry, yes. I mean, in general, the technology is moving very quickly. Younger tech-savvy consumers who also happen to be our audience tend to download more, tend to record DVR their shows, watch them a day, two, maybe a week later, maybe more, and that impacts the ratings. Good or bad, I mean, I really don't have an opinion. It's kind of bad for television right now, given the way they gather ratings. And the fact that, they don't really factor in things like downloads. And, obviously it hurts certain shows more than others. And, hopefully, they'll catch up. In fact, actually, I was reading an article, an interesting article. I don't know who the heck they were interviewing, but they were showing also, they're trying to sort of note kind of the parallel, the drop in television viewership and the rise in phone apps. The fact that people, more and more people are actually playing games they've downloaded on their phones than watching television. And if you can turn off your brain, whether you watch TV or you play a game, it all amounts to the same thing, except for, you know, people looking for ratings.
Interesting.
I bought all the DVDs.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, thank you card. I think, you know, we're sending out thank you cards to every person who buys.
You know, you're not wrong. You know, Nielsen ratings, which is what I think drives all this, they got to catch up.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of shows that would still be on the air, genre shows that would still be on the air if they were paying attention to TiVo.
Well, exactly. I mean, like you said, genre shows. I mean, I brought up the example of Chuck.
I love Chuck.
One of the fans mentioned Chuck, and I said, you know, Chuck, you know, is a genre show. Chuck's audience is going to be younger and tech savvier, and they're going to be more likely to download. And, you know, it's kind of hard to get download figures, but, you know, the anecdotal evidence I've come across seems to bear this out, that Chuck is a heavily downloaded show. And it saddens me whenever, you know, I read articles about, you know, oh, Chuck, you know, is Chuck on the bubble or is Chuck going to get canceled? Because the ratings, you know, those television ratings don't reflect the audience, the true audience of the show.
Nope. And just for the record, on Monday, Sarah modeled three different bikinis on Chuck. That's as far as I got on the episode.
I got to start watching.
I didn't even realize, to be honest with you, TJ on Universe, I didn't realize had played a superhero, I guess, on Smallville.
Black Canary. Yep.
Cool.
Looks completely different on Universe.
Yeah. Yeah. She was talking about how awkward that outfit was to get into. And she was talking, you know, it's just so weird when superheroes are getting intimate, how the heck they get in and out of those spandex outfits. And she was doing this whole routine at,
She needs to watch Watchmen.
Yeah.
I do have one more question, I think, and then we're going to probably let you go here in just a couple minutes. The question came up, who or what is Chloe? What kind of character is she? You know, I guess we're not quite understanding yet, and maybe this is something for the future, but we don't quite understand yet who Chloe is and what her purpose is on the ship.
Well, I mean, the intention for Chloe, the intention of the crew, creating sort of this crew of, I wouldn't call them misfits, but fish out of water, and placing them on Destiny was to, you know, put the wrong, you know, I think one of them, you know, one of the characters says we're the wrong people, you know, in the wrong place. And whereas in previous Stargate incarnations, you had like the military teams and sort of the trained researchers and civilians. The idea was to create this group of, you know, disparate individuals who were, you know, fish out of water, but only to a certain extent, because really when you think about it, they were on the Icarus base and really they, you know, even though they didn't volunteer for a mission, you know, on Destiny, they did volunteer for, you know, a mission on Icarus, and presumably down the line they would have, you know, gone off world. But the characters of Eli and Chloe were intended to embody the true fish out of water, and it's kind of the hope that fans would, you know, in some ways connect with these characters. You know, obviously Eli Moore, because he's kind of a geek, you know, much like David Chuck himself. Yeah, exactly. And you know, Chloe to a sort of a lesser extent. I mean, she, you know, she was introduced as kind of the fish out of water and you know, the outsider. And I'm sorry, my dog is just going nuts about that. You know, quite honestly, she's a character that really didn't find her footing in that first, you know, that first season. Whereas all the other characters, you know, eventually found their roles. It was a struggle for, I guess, the Chloe character to find, you know, her role. And, you know, as season two progresses, she does assume an unlikely role. I mean, we've kind of hinted at it, the fact that, you know, she's wounded. She displays remarkable, you know, regenerative abilities. The fact that back in the episode Lost, she was able to make sense of the alien writing. Those are all kind of hints as to, you know, what's to come, and some of that will play out in the first half and hopefully into, you know, well into season two as well.
Awesome. JP, did you have any questions?
The one thing I was thinking about, how much input or influence does the sci-fi have over maybe the universe in general or each individual episode?
They get all the scripts, they get all the cuts, and, you know, we do receive script notes and cut notes on every episode. So, I mean, they are involved. Erica Kinnear, the lovely, lovely Erica Kinnear, is our point person at Sci-Fi. And, she's a smart individual. She, you know, there's never a point where, you know, I look at the notes and say, what the hell is she thinking? I may disagree with her notes at times. And, I've taken to giving notes on her notes, where basically I'll go through her notes and I'll say, okay, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. I can't do this for this reason, and this I won't do, but I'll tell you why I don't think it's a good idea, and we'll just go back and forth that way. Or, you know, I'm better on paper, as you know with this interview. Paul, my writing partner, is better on the phone, so he just likes to get on the phone and basically talk through the notes with her. So, I mean, you know, I think we have a pretty good relationship with the network, and you know, they're involved in, you know, the creative and production aspects, and we work together well, especially because, you know, I think because of Erica and now Claire Sherwood has joined the team, and, you know, I've worked with Claire back on Atlantis, and, I have a good time working with her as well.
DiNardo?
Just an observation. I noticed a couple times tonight you've mentioned that reactions from the fans. It sounds like you pay attention to that sort of thing.
Through my blog, I do receive the occasional comment. Back in the day, we used to, you know, frequent the forums. Paul never checked out the forum. My writing partner, Paul, is just like, you guys are just asking for trouble. I don't know what you guys are thinking, so he doesn't do it. Martin Garrow, Carl and Rob and Brad they check out Gate World on occasion to get sort of the episode reaction. They'll check out my blog as well. But we don't really check out the fan reaction online like we used to, just because we're very busy. I think between Gate World and say the Solution site and my blog, I get a fairly good idea of sort of what the fans are, reacting to, what's working for them, what's not working for them. I was just going to say, actually, just quickly, one of the things that I picked up on that the fans were complaining about season one was that the scenes would be so abrupt, that they would end so abruptly and go to commercial. It was just very disjointed and jarring. And then I watched it on Space here in Canada, and I realized, holy crap, they're right. I don't know if you noticed, but in season two, we actually bought the blacks. So basically, rather than just do the hard cut to commercial, we'll go to black and then go to commercial. And even though you may not even notice, just rhythmically, it makes such a difference. Just subconsciously, it makes such a difference. And I know that people who were sort of, you know, uncertain about this show when they were watching it on television, when they actually either ordered on Netflix or got the DVDs, marveled at the fact that it actually, the episodes flowed so much more smoothly than, you know, when they watched them, you know, live on television.
That's awesome. Hey, that's Anilio, you have a final question?
No, sure. I think that's a pretty good place to wrap it up.
Then I have a final question.
Okay.
Any plans, future plans to cross over with like Ghost Hunters or wrestling?
You know, maybe Triple H will join the crew as I know, bounty hunter. I don't know. You know, no plans. No plans. I'm not averse to crossovers, but Erica, you know, hasn't brought it up. Who would you like to see on the show?
I was thinking like Warehouse 13, maybe. Or...
Okay. Sal Rubinek, maybe.
Actually, I would not mind to see Saul. He is great. I've seen him in a lot of different things. Maybe not that particular character, but
that would be so much better than the Space Monkey Gleek.
Yes.
Don't sell Gleek short. I don't know. Yeah, well, I don't know.
I think, you know, I've read a lot of stuff and I've seen overwhelmingly like nobody wants to see replicators.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I felt, you know, late in very late in season 5 that the replicators were played out, which is why we got rid of them early in season 5. Yeah, I don't disagree.
I could tell that Ben Browder I think it was Continuum.
Arc of Truth.
Arc of Truth. I could tell that he just was so happy to be able to cuss. And cuss at the replicators.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I thought that was a nice little cap to the whole replicator piece.
Hey, how come they don't use the stones more?
Because you don't like them. I thought you said you
didn't like them. I said that.
Did you say? I thought it was you. Was it you?
It was me, Patrick. DiNardo, he's just, I don't know.
I'm just thinking they're out here in the middle of nowhere, and they got this lifeline back to home.
You will occasionally use the stones, and hopefully in sort of, you know, more interesting ways like we did with... in space. In fact, we got a couple of interesting uses of the stones coming up in season 2.
Well, actually, they did explain why they're not using them. The blueberry aliens can now intercept the signal.
Yeah, they can track them. That's right. Yes.
That would scare the crap out of you. Who would want to set that stone down and then suddenly wake up like at a tank of water?
Well, they're more cautious in their... it's a more judicious use of the stones. Because the blueberry aliens, could find a way to switch. And also because, was it JP or John who said they didn't like him?
Well, it was Patrick.
Patrick, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just like, I'd love to see, you know, them completely cut off. That was one of my things. It's like people have been comparing it to Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And, what's the other show they were comparing it to? I can't remember the other show, but they were kind of comparing it to Voyager and saying, and my thing was, what bothered me about Voyager was that they, they quickly, in Atlantis, really. So Voyager and Atlantis, it's like you're completely cut off from Earth, except now you can communicate with them.
Yep. Yep. I agree. And when we, there's certain technologies get introduced to the show and, some work out great, some not so great. Sorry, my dog is snoring here. For instance, I hated the beaming technology on SG-1 in Atlantis. It just became just too easy. So we'd always have to come with like these, ridiculous, reasons why we couldn't beam, people on and off the planets. And then you had the ships that could basically travel between galaxies. And, that made, things a little too easy as well. I mean, mm-hmm. And the stones, again, it's debatable. Some fans like them, some fans don't, some producers like them, some don't, but they're part of the show until a time when we can find a way to curtail their use drastically, end of season 2, or get rid of them, potentially season 3. So there you go.
Great, gotcha. Great. Well,
I think that's a great place to stop, John. You're
great
absolutely
stuff.
True.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff.
Tell people where to find your blog.
www.josephmalozzi.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And any other things you want to pimp, any upcoming stuff? You going to make any convention stops or?
No, I'm not the convention guy. You'll just find me on my blog. Today's blog features a little... rundown of the shuttle sequence, some pics and videos of the model used to approximate the shuttle crash that you can compare to the real shuttle sequence crash sequence that is also up on the blog. And, you know, a lot of fun stuff coming up.
Awesome.
Swing on by. Stay a while. Leave a call.
Well, thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, well, I would be remiss if I didn't also mention that Stargate Universe, 9 p.m. Tuesday nights on sci-fi.
There you go.
Friday nights, 9 p.m. on space.
Okay. Or Saturdays on my TiVo.
Yes. We're all going to your place. All going to
Awesome. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. And my dog thanks you because I'm going to go and feed them now.
Very cool.
Thanks, Joseph.
Have a great evening.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
Bye.